ที่ทำให
้โอมนะโมบะกะวะเทวาสุเดวายะโอมนะโมบะกะวะเทวาสุเดวายะโอมนะโมบะกะวะเทวาสุเดวายะ
So today we're reading from the 10th canto, the Summum Bonum. This is chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb. And this is text number 18.
Tato Jagan Mangalam Achyutam Sam.Tato jagan mangalam achutam sam samahitam shura sutena devi samahitam sura sutena devi dadhara sarvatmakamAtma Bhutam Dadhara Sarvatmakam Atma Bhutam Kashta Yatananda Karam Manasta Kashta Yatananda Karam Manasta.Tato jagan mangalam achutam sam Samahitam surasutena devi Dadhara sarvatmakam atmabhutam Kashta yatananda karam manastahaTato jagan mangalam achutam sam Samahitam shura sutena devi Dadhara sarvatmakam atmabhutam Kashta yatananda karam manastaha
Vaishnavis.Tam Suna Sutena Devi Samahitam Sura Sutaini Devi. Tato jagan mangalam achutam sam. Mahistam suda sutaini devi. Tathada sarvatmakam atma bhutam. Katasayastanakaram nanastaha. Tata. Thereafter. Jagat mangalam. Auspiciousness for all living entities. In all the universes of creation. Achyuta Amsam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never bereft of the six opulences, all of which are present in all his plenary expansions. Samahitam, fully transferred. Surasutena, by Vasudeva, the son of Surasena. Devi, Devaki Devi. Dadhara, carried. Sarva Atmakam, the supreme soul of everyone. Atmabhutam, the cause of all causes. Kasta, the east. Yata, just as. Anandakaram, the blissful moon. Manasta, being placed within the mind. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, the fully opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all auspicious for the entire universe, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Devaki, having thus been initiated by Vasudeva, became beautiful by carrying Lord Krishna, the original consciousness for everyone, the cause of all causes within the core of her heart, just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. Would you like to repeat it? Okay. Thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, the fully opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all auspicious for the entire universe, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Devaki, having thus been initiated by Vasudeva, became beautiful by carrying Lord Krishna, the original consciousness for everyone, the cause of all causes, within the heart, or within the core of her heart. Just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. Purport. It's a pretty powerful purport. It's a little lengthy. So let's dive into it. As indicated here by the word manasta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was transferred from the core of Vasudeva's mind or heart to the core of the heart of Devaki. We should note carefully that the Lord was transferred to Devaki not by the ordinary way for a human being, but by diksha, initiation. Thus, the importance of initiation is mentioned here. Unless one is initiated by the right person, who always carries within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot acquire the power to carry the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of one's own heart. The word Achyutam Sam is used because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sad Aishvarya Purna, full in the opulences of wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. The Supreme Godhead is never separated from His personal opulences. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, 539, Ramadi Murtishu Kalani Amena Tishtan. The Lord is always situated in all His plenary expansions, such as Rama, Nrisimha, and Varaha. Therefore, the word Achyutam Sam is specifically used here, signifying that the Lord is always present with His plenary expansions and opulences. There is no need to think of the Lord artificially as yogis do. Dhyanasvastista targatena manasa pashantiyam yoginaha. That's from the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1. Yogis meditate upon the Supreme Person within the mind. For a devotee, however, the Lord is present, and His presence need only be awakened through initiation by a bona fide spiritual master. The Lord did not need to live within the womb of Devaki, for His presence within the core of her heart was sufficient to carry Him. One is here forbidden to think that Krishna was begotten by Vasudeva within the womb of Devaki, and that she carried the child within her womb. When Vasudeva was sustaining the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, he appeared just like the glowing sun, whose shining rays are always unbearable and scorching to the common man. The form of the Lord situated in the pure, unalloyed heart of Vasudeva is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called Dham. Dham refers not only to Krishna's form, but to His name, His form, His qualities, and His paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. Thus, the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with full potencies, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki, exactly as the setting sun's rays are transferred to the full moon rising in the east. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, entered the body of Devaki from the body of Vasudeva. He was beyond the conditions of the ordinary living entity. When Krishna is there, it is to be understood that all His plenary expansions, such as Narayan, and incarnations like Nrisimha and Varaha, are with Him, and they are not subject to the conditions of material existence. In this way, Devaki became the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second and the cause of all causes. Lost my spot here. Let's see here. Oh, is that why I can't find it? It's a cause of all creation. Devaki became the residence of the absolute truth, but because she was within the house of Kamsa, she looked just like a suppressed fire or like misused education. When fire is covered by the walls of a pot or is kept in a jug, the illuminating rays of the fire cannot be very much appreciated. Similarly, misused knowledge, which does not benefit the people in general, is not very much appreciated. So Devaki was kept within the prison walls of Kamsa's palace, and no one could see her transcendental beauty, which resulted from her conceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Commenting upon this verse, Sri Viraragava Acharya writes, Vasudeva Devaki Jatarayor Hridayoryor Bhagavata Sambandana. The Supreme Lord's entrance into the womb of Devaki from the heart of Vasudeva was a heart-to-heart relationship. What a relationship, huh? So this is a very wonderful section of the Bhagavatam, and what a wonderful chapter about Krishna's appearance. And Prabhupada talks about here in the purport very nicely. We're going to discuss about Diksha, initiation, and how important that is. And then we will discuss a little bit about this heart-to-heart relationship, how important it is. So it's interesting how Prabhupada, from this particular purport, he brings in some ideas that came from the previous verse, and then he's bringing in ideas that's going to be in the next verse, like the word Dham was discussed very nicely in the previous class. And then in the next verse, we're going to discuss about this knowledge is like this light which is covered by the walls of a pot, which is like misused knowledge. It's not distributed, which will be very nicely discussed tomorrow. So anyway, today we'll dive into this particular section about initiation. And it talks about so much importance of associating with the pure devotee. And why is that? Because the pure devotee actually has Krishna within his heart. And he reveals that knowledge of that information. He reveals that information about Krishna from his words, which act like a match and ignite the fire that's within wood. Because Krishna is described to be like hiding. He's the super soul in the heart. And it's just like fire that's hiding in wood. So there needs to be a match to ignite that fire. And that's what the words of the pure devotee, they're like that match that will light that wood. And then ultimately we will connect with Krishna, the super soul, which is dormant there. So we see Srila Prabhupada, he had Krishna within his heart, is a pure devotee, and he's always trying to give it. Always giving and giving, always preaching nicely. He gave us so many wonderful gifts. You know, this beautiful deity forms of Krishna, so that we could utilize our senses to serve them and ignite Krishna's consciousness within the heart. He gave us prasadam, so we could become purified. So Prabhupada's always giving and giving, so therefore we should always be receiving from Srila Prabhupada. Always take advantage of his gifts. And in that way we can preach effectively and spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Just like now in business, they have this big thing where you have to always be giving something. People like to be given things. If you always think you're taking, if you're like trying to, you just want to get something out of them, then it's not very good business practice. So I heard a nice example, and a devotee gave a class. There was two merchants, I guess this was in India, and they were just right across from each other, right across the road. You see this a lot in India. And they were selling some grains or whatever. So one of them was doing very, very successfully. And the one right across the way was hardly making ends meet. He was always in the red. So after so many years, the one that was doing very poorly, he decided to go to his friend across the way. And he said, "What's your secret?" And he said, "Yes, there's a business secret, but I will reveal it to you because you've been my friends for so many years." But he said, "You see, what you do is when you sell the grains, maybe 5 kilos. You start off with a lot in the pot, more than 5 kilos, and then you take away, you keep taking away until it comes to 5 kilos. So that's not a very good attitude. Actually, people think you're taking away. But what I do is I have a pot, and I have the weight of 5 kilos, and I start with less, and I keep adding. And people's minds, yeah, keep going like that. So they like that, and they think, but it's the same amount. And they think, oh, he's giving. So this is the technique. Prabhupada says, if we always want to give Krishna consciousness, then we'll be successful. Just like some people in the beginning, we think, oh, we just have to tell people what they have to give up. You have to give up these bad activities. You have to give this, you have to do that. But no, we just give them prasadam, give them the holy names. You know, give them Krishna's activities. Engage them in service. So this is Prabhupada's gift. And this is a technique on how we can make many devotees. So that's what it is. It's that we're giving our love. We're trying to develop that heart-to-heart relationship. It's not a head-to-head relationship. Or an ego-to-ego relationship. Or intelligence-to-intelligence relationship. Because what happens when you put heads together, it's like, you know, you're butting. Like that, like the two sheep or the two goats butting heads. It doesn't really get anywhere. So first we have to open our heart. And there's a nice verse that describes that in the second canto. Certainly that heart is still framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. So Prabhupada talks about in that purport that's the whole process of spiritual culture. It's aimed on changing the heart of the living being in the matter of his eternal relationship with Krishna. As what? As a subordinate servant. Because that's our eternal constitutional position. Because it's so funny. We see people with this so-called knowledge about spiritual life, but yet they go out. And what is the ultimate thing that they teach? They say we have three secret words. And this is the ultimate thing, is that I am God. I actually heard this for the first time from some so-called spiritual leader. I couldn't believe it. It was like some kind of health seminar thing. And he was talking about all these nice things about karma, reincarnation and stuff. But what's the ultimate secret? Is you are God. It's so crazy. Anyway, that's cheating propensity. And Prabhupada very much criticized that you know, these cheaters, that they're not given proper knowledge. So this is the whole process of spiritual culture, is to understand that. And so with the progress of devotional service, our heart is actually changed. And then it's a gradual development that we automatically will become detached from sense gratification, this material sense enjoyment. It comes automatically. And then we have an attitude of rendering service to Krishna. And this is what Vidhi Bhakti is all about. Prabhupada describes, it's regulated devotional service with the limbs of our body. So we can see how we're so practically applying that in our Krishna consciousness movement. It's like the deities. We utilize our limbs to dress the deities, to bathe the deities, to offer artik, to cook for the deities, to clean the temple. So many ways we're engaged in our limbs. And this is the regulated devotional service. We use our eyes, our ears, our nose, hands, legs, everything. And our mind. So that way the mind becomes conscious of Krishna. And this is how we discharge Krishna consciousness, and Krishna becomes manifest in your heart. So Prabhupada mentions how we should always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional service. And if they're properly performed, then automatically the reaction will be ecstatic. There'll be tears in the eyes. There'll be standing of the hairs on the end. So these are the natural consequences of this preliminary devotional service. And then we get the preliminary results of ecstasy, like bhava stage. I heard one comment by a devotee that Prabhupada, some people were criticizing Prabhupada's disciples. And Prabhupada made a comment about that, and he said, you know, all my disciples, they're on the bhava stage. He mentioned that, just to encourage the devotees. And what is that? That's the stage that comes before that prema, love of God. So Prabhupada mentions here that the whole process can be summarized as follows. The advanced devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord without offense and is friendly to everyone, he can actually relish the taste of this transcendental bliss. And as a result of that realization, it's reflected by his cessation of all material desires. So from the neophyte stage, the lower stage, then we become advanced. But if the neophyte, if they're envious and they invent their own ways of devotional service, then they'll never actually attain this. And that's why it's described that their heart is like still framed. So there's some very practical processes for attaining this heart-to-heart relationship. And it's very nicely described by Bhaktitirtha Swami in one of his books. It's probably one of the spiritual warrior books. I'm not sure what the actual chapter, let me see if it describes it here. Yeah, Spiritual Warrior, Transforming Lust into Love. And this is one section about a relationship, just like the relationship that Vasudeva had with Devaki. It was a heart-to-heart relationship. So how can we practically develop that? And it gives some very nice points. We'll just touch upon them and don't really have time to elaborate on each one. But he mentions here how, number one is, love is necessary for good physical and spiritual health. So when one's in a loving relationship with someone, it's 10 times less likely that he'll get some kind of chronic disease, or 5 times less likely to have a mental breakdown. This is how important to have loving relationships it is. And we're all looking for that love. And then number two, he says, love is not a business arrangement or a contract with an escape clause for difficult circumstances. So, you know, it's not that we get into a relationship and if it gets difficult, then we just leave. It's not like we're, you know, we have this shopping list we need. If we don't get this, then I leave. But it should be unmotivated, unconditional. And that's what real love is all about. And it's not like we have to remind God about what I need. But he knows, he already knows. But our real prayer should be, you know, let thy will be done. And then number three, he says, love is a decision that we can personally make at any time and under any circumstance. It's not that we have the power to make someone love you. But we can, at any time, in any moment, we can give away our love. And this is where we're trained to give the highest love. Srila Prabhupada has taught us how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So number four, he says, love is learning to love our true selves. So first we have to, if you don't have love for yourself, how can you even love anybody else? If you don't even respect yourself, like taking intoxication and doing immoral activities, then you're actually destroying yourself. You don't even love yourself, what to speak of loving others. And number five, love is about a quest for wholeness. And if necessary, having a partner to share one's wholeness with. So this is interesting how, first of all, that if you love yourself and you're whole in yourself and you find someone else you can share Krishna consciousness with, then that person is whole. Then you're two wholes really doing something wonderful for society, instead of one person needy or both persons needy trying to gain something. It doesn't work that way. It's not like two desperate people trying to find fulfillment in themselves, coming together to rob each other. You know, extremely needy, selfish persons, how can they make each other happy? So this is, we're too busy trying to exploit other people, trying to get something at their expense. So he goes on here. Love is a holy relationship in which partners come together to serve and reveal their weaknesses and strengths for betterment. In an unholy relationship, everyone especially hides their weaknesses. Such people are normally interested in erotic love, lust, rather than responsible, selfless love. And then another one is, love is really the energy and hunger of the soul. And he describes how when we're asking for love, we're asking for a connection with the soul. This is the real heart-to-heart relationship. We should not expect love to descend on us like an attack of an epilepsy, but it must be rediscovered at every moment by transforming lust into love. And that's how it's from soul to soul. And that's what we're starving for, that unconditional love. And then number 9 here. Love is seeing our partner as a gift from God. So it describes here that we have to actually go beyond loving our neighbors as ourselves, but actually we should love them more than ourselves. And then seeing them as gifts from God, seeing the super soul actually in their heart. So it goes on and on. There's so many wonderful ideas about this relationship. And I think you get the idea. But anyway, you can look that up if you want to see more of these. It's very interesting. I'll just read a couple more. The last two. Love is having or looking for a partner to heal the world, not escape it. Normally, many people seek out a partner to escape the world. They're miserable with life and they feel that everything else can be tolerated or fixed if they somehow or another find that special person. We cannot heal the world if we're too wounded ourselves. So here's the last one he says here. Love is about treating all relationships as practice in preparation for the ultimate divine relationship in the kingdom of God. We should see that all our relationships as God sending us a partner to fix whatever has to be fixed before we join up with Him eternally. This means that we should practice seeing our mate as an agent of God, recognizing our own divine nature, and remembering that we are children of God, for whom great realizations and pleasures are available. Only in the kingdom of God will we find the love and the eternal relationships we long for so deeply. So that's very nicely described there. Wonderful realizations and very practical. So there's some very nice examples of that in the Srimad Bhagavatam also besides Vasudevan Devaki. And this is from the 10th canto. Actually, this is from the Krishna book. And it describes here the relationship among the devotees. Another gopi said to her friends, "My dear friends, the cows are so charmed as soon as they hear the transcendental sound of the flute of Krishna." So any sound about Krishna is wonderful. And that's what the pure devotee gives. He awakens Krishna within the heart like a match. It sounds to them like the pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch this, can be culminated in the shedding of tears from the eyes. So that's the chapter on the gopis attracted by the flute of Krishna. Here's another one from the Krishna book. Actually, this is Lord Balaram. He meets the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So this is very nice. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were all well-wishers and intimate friends of the Yadu dynasty. This meeting of the two parties after long separation was a very touching incident. All the Yadus and the residents of Vrindavan felt such great pleasure in meeting and talking together that it was a unique scene. Meeting after long separation, they were all jubilant. Their hearts throbbed, and their faces appeared like freshly blooming lotus flowers. Drops of tears fell from their eyes. The hair on their bodies stood on end, and because of their extreme ecstasy, they were temporarily speechless. In other words, they dove into an ocean of happiness. Just see the devotees. When you see the other devotees, how they had such heart-to-heart relationships. While the men were meeting in that way, the women also met one another in the same manner. They embraced one another in great friendship, smiling very mildly, and looked at one another with much affection. When they were embracing one another in their arms, The saffron and kumkum spread on their breasts was exchanged from one person to another, and they all felt heavenly ecstasy. Due to such heart-to-heart embracing, torrents of tears glided down their cheeks. And then it goes on. The juniors were offering obeisances to the elders, and the elders were offering their blessings to the juniors. They thus welcomed one another and asked after one another's welfare. Ultimately, however, all their talk was only of Krishna. All the neighbors and the relatives were connected with Lord Krishna's pastimes in this world. And as such, Krishna was the center of all their activities. Whatever activities they performed, social, political, religious, or conventional, were transcendental. One of the items that Bhakti Tirthaswami mentions also is that you should see the relationship between your loved one as like a triangle. There's you and your partner and Krishna. So this is what he's describing here, how they saw everything. Krishna was the center of all their activities, and they just discussed Krishna. So here Prabhupada ends here. The real elevation of human life rests on knowledge and renunciation, as stated in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Devotional service rendered to Krishna automatically produces perfect knowledge and renunciation. The family members of the Yadu dynasty and the cowherds of Vrindavan had their minds fixed on Krishna. That is a symptom of perfect knowledge, and because their minds were always engaged in Krishna, they were automatically freed from all material activities. This stage of life is called Yukta Vragya. As enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami, knowledge and renunciation, therefore, do not mean dry speculation and renunciation of activities. Rather, one must start speaking and acting only in relation to Krishna. So that's so nice. So there's another section here. I found some nectar about what is this love? What is that thing you experience in these heart-to-heart relationships? And who else can describe that but Srimati Radharani? And this is very nicely described. There's many verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that describe this. And there's also a wonderful book that's by, let me see if I can find that. It's by Shivaram Swami. It's called the Na Parahe Ham. And there's a section, part three, Prema Samputa, the love box. And this is Radhika is describing the jewels in her love box to Krishna. Krishna's begging her to explain to thee, what is this? And he's like, you know, I'm just totally surrendered to you, Radha, that you have to give me this secret that you have. Please explain it to me. And so she begins to describe what these jewels are. And it's very wonderful. We'll just read a couple of these things here. Because these words are so wonderful, these descriptions of Krishna's and this love, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described how the wonderful descriptions of Rupa Goswami are superb arrangements to express loving affairs. Hearing them will plunge the heart and ears of everyone into a whirlpool of transcendental bliss. And then he quotes this verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What is the use of a bowman's arrow or a poet's poetry if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin? So he's saying how he couldn't have described this without your mercy, Lord Chaitanya. So therefore, he's definitely empowered with your potency, with your power. Just like Vasudeva had Krishna, he had everything. Krishna and all his opulences and everything were there, and he transferred it to Devaki through initiation. So in the same way, Lord Chaitanya empowers his devotees to do some wonderful things. Simply by service, he says, that if you just show some service to Krishna, then he'll give you special favor, and he empower you to discharge devotional service. So let's get to the nectar here. So, Krishna speaking. Here's Krishna surrendering to her. Okay, so he says here, if you want to hear about prema, then listen. Prema is so great that learned Vedic scholars cannot understand it. or to speak of others who claim to know it. One who attempts to instruct an inquisitive person by measuring prema or comparing it to anything else has failed to comprehend prema. One who hears such a teacher is misled. Such exchange is but cheating. For prema disappears before both the discriminate and the indiscriminate. So hearing these words of ultimate wisdom, Lalita and Vishakha smiled at each other. They were thrilled that Radha's innermost secrets are being disclosed through her own lips. But that pure-hearted soul, whose mind is imbued with affection, attachment, free from all speculation, alone sits upon the throne of natural love. So that, see, we can't speculate and try to be engaged in devotional service according to our own, but actually follow the words of the pure devotee. If you ask, what is the symptoms of such love? And I shall answer, love is that attachment to which the lover's every act is solely dedicated to the happiness of the beloved. So that's the symptom of love. So Sri Hari drank the nectar of Radhika's words through his ears. Who but her was qualified to describe the constitution of love? Prema is supremely self-sufficient and independent. It knows itself by itself, and so requires no second agent for its sustenance or nourishment. The very effort to understand it augurs its absence from the heart. Such futile labor can never force prema to appear. The tender maiden of prema flees at any attempt, be it linguistic, rational, philosophical, or otherwise, to define her. Unless prema is in the heart, empowering the mind and senses by its influence, any effort to understand it is futile. The only consideration that nurture prema are, what will please my lover and what will displease my lover? That's from the fourth canto, third chapter, text 23. Already in the fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada is giving some of the highest realizations of Krishna consciousness. So it goes on, and let's see. So this is prema personified, who is Radharani, so she's qualified to describe this. And here Radha continues. She says, the miseries of this world resulting from present and future happiness, family affairs, political intrigues, bodily pains, and unrequited love appears insurmountable as Mount Sumeru. They are, however, conquered effortlessly by supremely powerful prema. As a lion feeds on elephants, prema removes all obstacles in its path, only to be nourished by those very obstacles. So it describes how the lion is so proud and full of power that this is like prema, which is unafraid of anything. Nothing disturbs it. Any kind of material miseries or distress, nothing will bother it. So this is so nicely described here. So here he describes the pleasing rays of the moon indicate the happiness of the beloved's association, and the fearful heat of the sun is the sorrow of his separation. So this is the moon and the sun, how they're so poetically describing this activity of Krishna consciousness and its result, Krishna prema. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Any comments, realizations, questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much. I'll go to Srimad Bhagavatam.